Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
There's gold fever on the streets of St. Paul.
A billion-dollar con.
We finally hit the big time.
A jackpot.
There was no sign of anything that was amiss.
Everybody wanted to get rich.
The $6 billion gold scam from the BBC World Service and CBC. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's too good to be true. It's too good to be true.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. This is the last suitcase I packed when I left Iran. It's red and a standard small checked luggage. When I was packing it back in July 2009, I didn't really think I wasn't going back to Iran. So I chucked in the usual stuff you would pack for a short holiday. A few dresses, my makeup bag, my laptop, and just a few other essentials. I didn't pack as if I was moving to another country. I left so much stuff behind. Today, this suitcase has become a symbol of something bigger. Resilience and the will to move on and build a new life. I'm not the only BBC journalist living in exile. There are 310 of us, and the number has nearly doubled in the past 4 years. Many face jail sentences, death threats, and harassment, both online and offline, because of the work they do. Some prefer to remain anonymous. But today, I'm joined by two of my colleagues, Shazia Haya from BBC Pashto and Nina Nazarova from BBC Russian, who are both happy to share their stories and the content of their last suitcase with me. First up is Shazia, who left Afghanistan in a rush after the Taliban took over in the summer of 2021.
We were told that we are not allowed to take so many things with us because we were about to get evacuated in military aircrafts. So there wasn't...
From Kabul.
Yeah, from Kabul. So there wasn't that space that you can take all your luggage, you know what I mean. So I had very small bag. So in that bag, I had like two dresses that were gifts from my beloved one. Even though up to now, I haven't worn those dresses, but still I have made myself. Aww. It's like a gift. And I had a scarf from my mother. Aww. And it was like something really valuable. Then phone, batteries, chargers. And unfortunately, every time when I'm going on deployment or I have like a tough job or something important is happening, my period just started.
So
that
bad.
Was the first day of my period and I had my pads as well. So that's why I can't forget.
I'm sorry,
those
Shazia.
Days and nights that I got evacuated and I traveled. Oh my God, that was really difficult.
It never makes anything easier.
No.
Nina, what about you? What was your last suitcase and what was in it?
Sure, but if I just may add to Shazia's story, which is absolutely heartbreaking, that it just reminded me of this proverb, whatever a man can do, a woman can do bleeding. That just shows how powerful women are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and my family, my husband, my son, and I took two suitcases and I packed them in a hurry. The stuff was mostly baby's things because my son was 16 months old at the time. And other things were very random. For instance, I, for some unexplainable reason, I took my pillow, and not even like an expensive pillow, just a regular one. So, but for some reason, I grabbed it with me. Probably it was like some I wanted something like nice and comfortable with me. Yeah. So, and I still sleep on it 2 years later.
You know, when I was packing my suitcase, there were protests happening in Iran, and people were on the streets, and I got information that if I don't leave the country, I might be banned from leaving. And at that time, you know, they were putting a lot of journalists in prison. So I just decided in just a few days to just pack and leave. But I thought I was going to go back, that things will calm down and I will go back. And it's been 15 years. I haven't gone back. What was happening? Under what circumstances did you decide to leave, Shazia?
Well, on 15th of August in 2021, Kabul fell.
So the 15th of August was the day that the Taliban took over Kabul and took power in Afghanistan.
Yes, in 2021. So during those days, of course, there was a conversation about our evacuation because of the risks that we were facing during that time and because of our safety. On 21st of August, around 2 a.m., I received that call, and I didn't expect that we should leave on the 21st, but I was told that, no, this is the time you should go to the airport. So, oh my God, that was like, even I couldn't imagine. My mom put my stuff in my bag, that smallest bag. Then I was worried about how to find the taxi. So I called to one of my dearest friend, and at 2 a.m. I called him and said that, okay, now I can't find a taxi. Can you come to my home and drop me to the airport? And he came. I mean, look, 2 a.m., he was asleep.
In Kabul under Taliban.
Under Taliban. Oh. I just called him that, come, leave your home, come to my home and take me to the airport. And I left home around 2:30 or maybe 3. I was so nervous. I didn't know how to say goodbye. I hate saying goodbye. I never ever did that. Even sometimes my family members came to Kabul from abroad and they went back to their places. I never ever say goodbye to them. It's my habit. And I did the same thing. I didn't say goodbye to my mom because she was about to cry, and I just hugged her. And I couldn't see my brother's face. He's the youngest one. Now he's 22. And I don't know. I was nervous. I was scared. I was worried about the streets, about my safety, that, okay, how can I reach the airport? And somehow I couldn't hug my younger brother. And this is the only regret that till today I have with myself, that why I couldn't hug him. He's my, like, little baby. He's the prince of our life. I love him so much, but I wish I could hug him tight. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. Yeah.
Nina, do you remember under what circumstances you were packing?
Yes, and to be honest, I had never planned to leave Russia before the full-scale invasion to Ukraine started. I always believed that my skills were needed in the country, and I made the whole journey of not planning to leave the country to becoming a journalist in exile in 9 days. So at first, Russia started the full-scale invasion to Ukraine, which came as a huge shock, and like days after this invasion started, Russian parliament introduced the war censorship laws. These laws basically say that the only credible source of information is Russian Ministry of Defense. And if you say or quote anything else not approved by the Ministry of Defense, you commit a crime of fake news. And the punishments are up to 15 years in prison. So Putin signed the laws on 4th of March 2022. And that was the day when we left. So we knew in advance there were like a short pause between parliament introduces the draft laws and like before the president signs it. Once these laws were introduced, we decided it's better to leave the country. It was all in a blur. We didn't know where to go. So my husband and I just looked for the cheapest airplane tickets outside of Russia. And it happened to be Turkey. And I packed everything and we left.
How much time did you have from the moment that you found...
2 days.
2 days? Oh.
It was so surreal and it was very difficult to believe it was all happening that I didn't have the guts to tell my mother that we might be leaving for good. So I just told her that we like are leaving for a while to see how things would unfold. At the same, I didn't have the guts to tell my uncle who drove us to the airport, actually. And also, even after we left for some time, we paid our nanny because, again, it was too abrupt for me to just... tell her, okay, so we're leaving for good, bye. Okay, bye, thank you. And so for, I think, like a couple of more weeks or 3 weeks, we paid her salary just to process things.
Yeah. I remember when I packed and I was going to the airport, I was just, there were so many things I needed to process. One of them was that, what happens if when I get to the airport and what if they don't let me get on the plane? What if they arrest me? So I had to have this strategy and this plan with the person who was driving me to the airport and was going to come to the airport while I get on the plane. He called me on my phone and told me to leave my phone on. And if anyone takes me, I start describing them physically. Like what they look like so that he would know to then later on maybe find where I am because people would disappear, you know, at that time. So what was going on in your head, Shazia, when you were packing? Obviously, you were on your period and you didn't know how to get to the airport, but what else?
Well, during crossing the streets, it was a bit scary. Because Taliban members were standing in every checkpoint. But when I arrived to the airport, I had mixed of emotions. I had pain. I had, like, the miserable time. And,
There was chaos.
Chaos. There was a firing. The situation was chaotic. And there was a front door entrance of the Kabul airport. I arrived there, so many people, you know, they came to the airport and somehow they wanted to enter to the airport and left the country. That's why the situation was chaotic. So Taliban members, they didn't allow everyone easily to enter to the airport. So there was a guy, he looked really young and he was Talib. And I just really politely, I came to him. I couldn't tell him that, of course, I'm BBC members because of my safety. And I just told him that inside the airport, my husband is waiting for me. So could you please allow me to go there? And he cursed me. I said that I know you're lying. Go back to your home. And then I look around and finally I found another taxi person. And he said, I know there's another entrance. And then I can take you to there. So he took us to that entrance. There were like 400, 500 people in the queue. So we waited like from maybe 3 a.m. or 3:30 a.m. till 7 or 8 a.m. in the morning. Finally, I somehow entered to the airport.
Wow, all that time.
All that time, yeah.
Nina?
Well, our departure was pretty casual, obviously, compared to your journey. There were rumors back then that Putin could close the borders, but we just acted like we're like a family with a baby who are going on vacation, so just pretty casually. But we were anxious, obviously, because it was like an unpredictable situation.
Did you know that you weren't going to go back?
Yes. Mm. I mean, I was like gradually. So, I mean, still 2 years later, I still have no idea whether I will ever go back or not. So probably I still haven't come to terms with it. I mean, like, I don't know.
For me, it's been 15 years and I still don't know. So I totally feel you.
Yeah. Actually, my husband cried once the plane took off. And it was like they sometimes show something like this in the movies, like a person who is going into exile looks out the airplane window and sheds some tears. So it was, it felt surreal. I was in a blur and I was a bit numb. Yeah, but then we landed in Istanbul, and for some days I just wandered with a stroller along the streets of Istanbul and just trying to process.
To process it, yeah. So Nina, you went to Istanbul. How long were you there until you moved to where you are right now, Riga?
Again, it was very hectic because we finally came to Riga in April. So it was a month approximately between our departure from Russia and driving to Riga.
Shlatia, I know you stayed in the airport for a couple of days, no?
Yeah, it's like around two nights and 3 days. So on third day, I had my flight.
I think we've all seen that, the images and the footage from that airplane.
Welcome to special coverage of Afghanistan, where the Taliban is now effectively in control, including in the capital, Kabul. The takeover of the city.
At Kabul airport, the desperation is dangerous. An American military transport plane on the runway this morning, mobbed by Afghans trying to flee their country. Eventually, the plane takes off. Moments later, as it gains altitude, it appears that two people fall to the ground.
Well, listen, look at the tracer fire in the air. The guns are going off.
How did you feel when you finally got on?
It was really difficult to believe that this is true. Sometimes you think that those things that happened was like a dream. I was thinking about so many things. I couldn't feel myself at that moment. I was hungry, I was in pain, I was tired. I couldn't sleep for two nights and 3 days. I couldn't like take a bath for three nights and days. It's not something that you can explain by words. The pain of missing your family and leaving them is on one side. The pain of your body is on other side. Hearing firing around you is something else. So I was coping with all those things. And when I entered inside the military aircraft, that was the time that I started crying.
Aww.
And before that, I didn't cry. And it was like I was in shock. I just accepted that, okay, now everything is finished and I'm leaving. So I cried.
Aww.
Yeah, that was the moment. It's really difficult when you leave your family. Although I'm always saying that I was born in Afghanistan. Afghanistan gave me my life and UK saved my life. So both countries are very special for me. But the pain of leaving your family and you know that you're facing unclear future, it's really painful for a girl like me. We live with our parents, with our families.
Yeah.
We never go away from them, even when you become 18 years. So you don't leave your parents. You stay with your parents.
This is very difficult. I was living in my parents' home until I was almost 30 when I left. So I totally understand. But there is a quote, I don't remember by who, but it says, home is not necessarily where you were born, but where your efforts to run away stop.
Yeah, so true.
So for me, really, London has been home and has become home.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I'm Farina Kamidi, and on this episode of The Fifth Floor, I'm talking about living in exile with my colleagues Shazia and Nina. So, Shazia, what is life like now in London?
It's full of excitement. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, full of opportunities. Sometimes you struggle with the weather, but it's fine now. Summer is coming. New people, new country. There's a lot to learn. I have made really, really good friends in here and good colleagues, and I'm really grateful for them. You can find so many good souls in here who can help you without no reason. But still, there's a empty part in my life, even in the UK, in here, and that's my family, my mum and my younger brother. I love them so much. I miss them so much. The other night, I didn't have my dinner, and silently I stood in the kitchen and was making dinner. And then I thought about my mom, that, oh my God, how much I was lucky that every day, like three times in a day, my meal was ready. And sometimes even I didn't like something, so I just, you know, like a spoiled child, I made her to go to kitchen and made something else for me. And I felt really, really bad about that spoiled child. And in that moment, I wanted to say sorry to my mom. I love you so much, Mom. I wish I didn't do those things. I wish I could appreciate your presence.
Nina, when she was talking about the mom in the kitchen cooking three meals a day, I saw you nodding.
Nodding, yes.
We've all been there. Yeah.
I very much sympathize with what Shazia is saying, because the thing I miss the most is being around my mom, my mother-in-law, my dad. This feeling of like a bigger family around myself. And I gave birth to my son not like really long before we left. And the last year in Russia was this incredible feeling of like this love of the whole, the bigger family. So, you know, like this peculiar kind of love when like a new family member is born. So everyone just coming around and bringing toys and just admiring and cooing. And yeah, so I miss it very much. But I think we are lucky that we managed to meet our mothers. We will meet in third countries. Mm. And indeed, when we are all together, I never cook. Never. I just... Yeah.
Mom spoils you.
Yes, yes, yes. And also, I mean, they badly miss us as well. Yeah. And last time, before our meeting, my mother-in-law literally sent me an Excel file where, like, with all the links with the toys she was planning to bring for my son, and I had to like go through them all and either approve or veto. So yeah,
that's so sweet.
Yes.
So when you see your family in a third country, what are the things you do? How do you spend your day?
Usually we rent an apartment and not a room in a hotel, just to be together, like all together in the same place. We eat together, we walk together, we do very regular things which we were supposed to do as a family, like in our ordinary lives, but it's just this week or 2 weeks in a year when we can actually do them.
Yeah.
So we don't do anything special. We do very, very, very normal, regular things
together. Yeah, it's the same with me. We drink a lot of tea and eat a lot of food and then talk, as if there is no tomorrow. Catch up on every story.
And we cry every time when we depart, naturally. So, yes, so that's...
Yeah.
That's the hardest part.
It is. It is so hard. Like, every time here in London, when my non-Iranian friends are saying, yeah, I'm just like, after work, I'm just popping by to see my parents, or I'm going for dinner with my, I'm like, yeah. Oh God, you're so lucky,
you're so lucky.
Or having your brother or your sister next to you. It's just something that people take for granted. Is it easy for you guys to keep in touch with your family, Nina?
Yes, we speak every day on WhatsApp.
Yeah. What about you, Shazia? Is it easy to keep in touch with your family in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I speak with them through WhatsApp, and my mother is my only fan. She's everything watching my programs, my reports, even in the whole program, if I voice over a small clip, so she can recognize my voice and send a message. Oh, today I have heard your voice. I'm happy for you. And when she watches my video programs, she's always commenting about my dresses, about my makeup. So yeah, every day I'm recording something, I'm doing something, I'm just waiting for my mom's message that okay, I'm receiving a feedback from my fan.
Hey John, she's cute. So both of you, have you made friends in London and Riga? Do you feel integrated? Do you feel like London is home, Shazia?
Again, I want to say that UK has saved my life. It's like my second home. And yeah, now we are part of this big family. I'm so lucky to have great friends and great colleagues like you and like my other Afghan colleagues in here, my friends outside the BBC. So yeah, now London is our home. We are happy and we are grateful for everything that we have in here. And I'm telling other people who is listening to me, please do appreciate whatever you have in your life. Please spend the most of your time with your family, especially with your parents.
Absolutely. Nina, how is Riga?
I think we settled in. It's been 2 years and we are learning language. And we were lucky to move to Riga with the whole bureau, BBC Moscow bureau. So I still have all my colleagues with me and all my friends among my colleagues as well. I try to make new acquaintances in Riga as well, but it's not that easy because, I have a full-time job. And after the work, I just go home to my son. But I know that many of my colleagues try to do this. And for instance, a colleague of mine joined a choir.
Nice.
A Latvian choir, yes. And she made amazing friends there. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you, ladies. And best of luck in your new homes.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to Shazia Haya from BBC Pashto and Nina Nazarova from BBC Russian. I'm Farhana Kamidi, and the Fifth Floor team this week was Alicia Joya and Caroline Ferguson. The sound engineers were Emma Hart and Giles Aspen. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.